making room for special needs adoption, embryo adoption, and a close relationship with an embryo donor family. That is what Graham and Libby Howe have been through in the past, oh, half decade or so. So this family has a lot going on. I think there's a lot you can learn from their story. We're all going to be inspired by it. And that's who we're talking to today on the Embryo Adoption Podcast. It's brought to you by the National Embryo Donation Center. You can find out more about us at the NEDC by going to embryodonation.org. Again, that's embryodonation.org for the world's leading embryo adoption provider. I'm Mark Mellinger, your host and the Marketing and Development Director at the NEDC. I love your story. I'm so glad that you two have joined us. So let's see. You have four kids. And before we get into exactly how your family was built, let's start at the beginning. I mean, how did you guys start down the road of adoption in the first place?
Yeah. So, I mean, probably a pretty typical story. We got married, wanted children, and couldn't have them biologically, I should say. So we struggled with unexplained infertility, which is a very frustrating kind because there's no answers. And I think we were both open to adoption pretty soon into it.
Yeah.
I love it.
I guess.
Yeah. Right. The whole process took a couple years to get there.
And we actually started off doing a foster program, and we knew that was going to be short term. It wasn't like foster to adopt. But we were going through the adoption process while doing that, and ended up getting placed with Macy, our daughter, while we had the little foster boy with us.
Yeah,
which is actually a pretty cool story.
He's six, and Macy's six now. He was six.
So he was six.
So let's talk about this. Yeah, tell me about him. Tell me about Macy.
Yeah, so he was awesome. His name was Matthew. He was 6 years old.
Terrifying. He was terrifying.
We were so, I mean, we had a dog and a cat, and then next thing we know, we have a 6 year old that we're responsible for. Obviously he was being fostered because his home life was pretty rough. We try to love him really well. You know, we would read the Jesus Storybook Bible with him and pray with him and stuff like that. And, you know, he began asking questions. And so that kind of all led up to this moment to where we'd actually been placed with another mother and child, and that ended up falling apart pretty last minute, like so last minute that we had a bunch of friends give us diapers and stuff like that. So we had this like pile of diapers sitting in our room, and he came in our room one day and he asked what the diapers were for. And, I just told him, I was like, well, that's for when me and Miss Libby adopt a baby. And he goes, well, you have to pray and ask Jesus for a baby. And I just like looked at him because, you know, that wasn't his home life growing up, you know? So him to say that was just like, what did you just say? And so I just kind of looked at him and I kneeled down and I said, you're right, buddy. You do. I said, do you want to pray that we have a baby? And he goes, yeah. So right then and there, he prayed for us that God would give us a baby. And it wasn't 6 hours later that we got the call about adopting Macy.
Yeah.
Wow. That's pretty wild. Unbelievable.
Yeah. That's just like a small piece. I mean, God's fingerprint was all over the whole.
Yeah. Macy's story really could be a movie.
Yeah.
Tell me about Macy. I know it is a good story. Tell our listeners about it.
Sure.
About her.
Sure. So Macy was born at 29 weeks, and we found out about her after she was born. She was obviously came early and was a surprise to the birth mom and birth dad. So they didn't even have time to go through the traditional process of looking at books and all that stuff. So we found out about her. We were on a plane and I got a call from the agency, and they were like, hey, you've been chosen. And I was like, do we need to get off the plane?
Yeah. We were just about to taxi to fly down to Florida for a little vacation with my folks.
And they were like, no, you have to several days at least need to go by legally before we will let you meet her. So anyway, we got back from Florida and we went to the NICU and we got to meet her. And
well, we met the parents first.
You want to tell that story?
Well, I mean, that's the best part.
Okay. So
sure.
So we met with the parents. We gave them our adoption book. You know, everybody makes one of those with pictures of us.
Yeah.
And,
yeah.
You know, so we meet them, and Libby was just absolutely terrified.
It was intimidating.
They were 18 and 19 years old.
It was intimidating to me.
They were young, just, you know, wild, wild kids.
Yeah. And there's some, maybe some expectations there that they had that I didn't realize they would have. So I felt like I was a little thrown off. So we go back that night. We're planning on meeting Macy the next day. So we haven't met her yet. So I'm in the closet of our house and I'm crying and I'm just like, God, is this the right thing? I feel so nervous about this. I just don't know about this. And as I'm praying about this, I get a phone call from this
text message
from a guy I used to work with.
Well, you didn't know that though. It was just an unknown number that you got a text from.
Yes. So he said, I have a story for you about your new daughter, Macy. And at this point, we had told no one. We told our parents, but we didn't tell anyone because we just had a failed adoption. And we were like, we just want that moment for us. We just want to meet her and then we'll tell everyone and celebrate. Yeah. So I call the guy. It ends up being a guy that I used to work with. So he starts telling me this story and he says, I had these neighbors, this neighbor and his girlfriend moved in with him. And we noticed that there was maybe some struggle there. And so we've really loved on this couple. And we found out that she was pregnant and we offered her resources to choose life. And we drove her to her doctor's appointments. And the friend I used to work with, his wife was pregnant as well. So fast forward, the church is praying for Macy's birth mom and dad and Macy by name. Every Sunday they're praying for her. They're buying her multivitamins,
groceries.
They're taking this church. We had no connection with this church. Just the guy.
Never been there. Didn't know anybody.
Yeah.
There.
And so, so then his wife was pregnant. Our friend's wife was pregnant. He took her to the hospital. They had the baby. They come back from the hospital. And a couple hours later, Macy's birth mom knocks on their door and says, I think I'm in labor. So he's like, all right, get in the car, goes back to the same hospital, same shift of nurses with a second pregnant lady. And they're like, what is going on? So he was able to explain, this is my neighbor. She's pregnant. And the nurses there were able to actually, one of Macy's NICU nurses who caught her, we became special friends with, and she had prayed for her too. So, So I found all that out the night before we were supposed to meet Macy. And that's just God's kindness.
And the way he knew it was us
was
because of that adoption book. So we had met them and she was really excited and she went over to their house, Macy's birth mom, and she had our adoption book. And I always tear up at this part.
It's okay. But,
she brought the book with her. She's like, we met this couple today and, you know, we think we're going to ask them to adopt Macy. But I'm really scared, really nervous. I just want to make sure we pick the best family.
Yeah. A family that would love her. You know, they wanted to make sure it's a good family.
So she gives him the book and he opens it and he's like, I know them.
Yeah. He's like, I know them. And he said nice things about us. So she felt so much better. So it was like the Lord blessing her to be like, yes, you made the right decision. This couple will really cherish and love your baby. And then I just felt God's kindness in that moment because I thought he didn't have to reveal that to me. We never would have had to know that part of her story, but just knowing how intentional her life was even before we were able to parent her, started us off on a really strong foundation and it just kind of kept going. But
yeah.
That's a long story.
it's a great story. And, you know, I mean, we'll get to the embryo adoption in a second. But I mean, you mentioned, you know, she came from, she was conceived in challenging circumstances. Pick up the story from when she was in your arms and she's yours.
Sure. So.
Yeah, we met her.
Yeah. Well, I met her.
The floor crying.
They did a little reveal at the NICU and they took the blanket off the isolette that she was in. And I'm leaning in to look at her and I'm looking to look for Graham, like, isn't she amazing? And he's like on the floor crying. You can tell who the emotional one is. But
not this guy.
So we met her and I mean, obviously immediately we were in love with her. Anyone who meets her falls in love with her immediately. Yeah. And we had a NICU journey with her. We were in the NICU for 6 or 7 weeks. I can't remember now.
Yeah. And it wasn't until probably like halfway through that we found out that she had special needs.
Yeah, I think it was she was going to have end, some, it was her second brain scan.
Some challenges.
Yeah. We knew it was possible because she was born at 29 weeks, but all of her scans and everything were coming back normal when we first adopted her. And then also God's thumbprint was all over that too, because we had her NICU neighbor, the other baby in a neighboring isolette was
some of my good friends from church. Yeah,
some of our old friends. And they had been praying for Macy. And,
yeah. And yeah, then, they had just been praying for her because they knew that she was going to be adopted and they didn't know by who or when. And then when we walked into the NICU, they were like, are you kidding me? Yeah. Like, this is your daughter. We've been praying for her.
Yeah. And then there's an interim family that took really sweet care of Macy. They went and got to hold her every day before we were able to adopt her. And mm-hmm. they were, I mean, super great and helpful in that phase of life. So right before we got to take her home, I think it was the week before, I guess the timeline doesn't much matter. Yeah. We had a second brain scan that didn't go so well. It showed that she has periventricular leukomalacia, which is basically just holes in your brain. So it revealed significant brain damage. And then that was a really hard thing. I mean, we knew at that point already, it was very cemented in our hearts. This was our daughter. So it didn't matter to us at all. Like that was,
I think the adoption agency actually even gave us the option to back out at that point. We're just like,
yeah, I don't remember if that happened specifically, but it was alluded to. I think it was mm-hmm. sort of like, hey, is this still the road you want to be on? Because it was
basically like, hey, you guys didn't, when we signed all of our adoption papers, you know, you check all these boxes, like, are you open to this? Are you open to this? And we're just like, this is our first kid. Our goal is just to keep it alive. Let's not go for the hardest.
We really said, and I'd written. So something.
Somebody was like, hey,
I think
like,
it was the doctor.
It wasn't the doctor.
It doesn't matter.
It may have been the doctor.
Anyway, yeah. Whoever it was,
it wasn't a thought, right? Under different circumstances, you know, if you choose to back out, like
it wasn't expected of us to, but we wanted to. And at that point it really just goes to show that his grace is there when you need it. Because at that point I felt, for no reason other than the grace of the Lord, I felt fully equipped to be her mom, even though I was new to the world of special needs, sort of. I mean, we have a niece with Down syndrome, but
we had no idea.
But yeah, we had no idea. And then, you know, she has cerebral palsy is what her later on diagnosis was. And that's just sort of a very nuanced, you know, it can be anything.
Yeah, I mean, similar to
autism, I guess. Autism, like there's sort of a spectrum. Yeah.
Thankfully, cognitively, you know, she's a little 6-year-old girl.
Yeah.
You know, physically, you know, she's
very limited
use of her, basically her left arm and hand, you know, and her right arm and legs, and she doesn't have much control over.
Yeah.
But the amount of joy that kid has in her life is just, oh man.
Yeah. She's a little beacon of,
it's convicting.
Of joy. Yeah.
It's convicting on those rough days when you're going through it. And then especially for me, and I get home from work and I look at her and I'm like, what am I complaining about? Like,
yeah.
You have everything to complain about. And right. You're just smiling and laughing and just so happy.
So she helps your spiritual growth.
Absolutely. And just even having to battle with some of those questions that she does have and is going to have. And it challenged our faith and our theology with stuff too. Just, you know, now you have someone else that you have to be responsible for. We're shaping her worldview on the Lord and on her, you know, her identity and who God created her to be. So that's also, I think, been really great for us. I mean, I think kids do that in general, regardless if they have needs. But
kids are good sanctification tools.
They sure are.
No matter what kind of a kid you have, or kids you have, that's just how it is. So you've got this going, and you know, and you said Macy's about 6 now. When did embryo adoption enter the picture? Okay, had you heard of embryo adoption before? What were your thoughts on it?
So I had heard of it. A friend of a friend had mentioned it, and I just thought, well, that's weird. Yeah. I think that's sort of weird. But we had, I guess, considered it after we had adopted Macy, I still had the desire as a woman just to be pregnant. I really had the desire, and I was obviously willing to lay that down. But I started praying, like, help me be content with not wanting to have a baby, not wanting to carry a baby, or, you know, maybe present an option. So we found out about embryo adoption, and I started Googling, and obviously NEDC is where we landed, because you guys have just like a stellar reputation, and we really wanted someplace that put the embryo first. That was just sort of important to us, and we think you guys do a great job at that. So we found NEDC, and then we just started the process, and then it went pretty quickly. We tend to, like, when we have, both of us, we're similar. When we get our mindset on something, we're like, we're doing it. Like, let's move forward.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Tell me about your boys through NEDC. You've expanded your family since Macy started your children.
Yeah. So we had twins from our first round of embryo adoption. So, well, I'll back up a little bit. So Graham and I, we had choices, obviously, you've probably talked about this on other podcasts, but when you go to NEDC, they give you a list of families that are potential donors. And Graham and I went through the list. We went through separately in a different room. And then we got together to see if we matched at all. That's sort of how we had quite a few options, which is a totally different thing than with traditional adoption. It's basically like you're marketing yourself and you're putting yourself out there, and you have to, you know, figure out what appeals to a birth mom or a birth dad. And with this, it's sort of the other way around. I mean, obviously the family still has to approve you, but we had so many options because there are so many embryos available. So we wanted to really make sure that we were both on the same page. So we separately chose our top five. We got back together, and our top one was the same. And so we rolled with that, and ended up, the donor family approved us, and ended up, I guess, did we, I can't remember the full process, but anyway, we did three rounds total for the first set of twins. So I did one round and then a second round, and that was super disheartening that neither one took. And then the third round, they actually implanted three embryos, and we had twins out of that, which was just so fun. I still remember when Linda called me I'll never forget that, about my numbers. And I knew based on the numbers, I thought, gosh, I bet I'm pregnant with twins.
Yeah.
I just felt it. So when we went there and they said, well, there's two heartbeats, I was like, yeah, of course there are. And she was like, oh, you're not surprised? I was like, no.
Graham, what'd you think?
I was stoked. I wanted to have twins from the beginning.
Yeah, because he didn't have to carry them.
Yeah. Well, you're right. Right. You're right. As guys, we're always stoked. We really don't care.
No, I wouldn't change it. That's just a joke. I wouldn't change it for anything. I love having twins, and I recommend everyone have twins.
Yeah. So, and this is Gideon and Judah are your twins, right? And they're what, like 3 years old now?
Uh-huh. They're three and a half now.
Okay. Gotcha. Yeah. And before we continue your story, because there's at least one more chapter to it, how did the household adjust? You've got Macy, who, you know, as you mentioned, requires some special outfitting in terms of how you build your life, and you've got either your first carried pregnancy, you have twin boys. I mean, how did this work out? Was it did it ever feel like it was too much
all the time?
Yes. No, I mean,
twins aren't like, I heard somebody say twins aren't twice as hard. There's like a multiplication factor there.
And that
felt really accurate. Of course, I wasn't the one that was breastfeeding twins and getting up in the middle of the night.
Every 30 minutes.
It's still tough for me, man.
Stop. Yeah. So, I mean, there were, in hindsight, I realized how hard it was. I think at the time, and this is just the blessing of infertility, at the time, I was just so thrilled to be pregnant that I really didn't struggle with the challenges as much as I probably would have if I would have gotten pregnant right away. Yeah. So, I mean, I remember third trimester with the twins, I was sleeping up in a chair for probably a couple months, and I was on bed rest for a little bit in there, but I ended up carrying them until 38 and a half weeks, which I think is pretty crazy. Wow. Yeah, so it's challenging, but I think, you know, the goodness of the Lord, okay, I keep referencing that, but I can't not talk about God because he orchestrated the whole thing. So with the twins, after they were born, I couldn't spend as much time with Macy, and it ended up actually being great. It's how she first took her first sip of water independently. All of these things that, like, there were times when I couldn't actually do what she needed me to do in the moment. Obviously, if it were something big, I would have done it. But like, so she would be sitting there and she would pretend to feed her little baby doll when I would feed the twins. And I remember looking over and she really wanted a drink of water. And I said, I will get you a drink of water as soon as I'm done feeding them. And she just started struggling with a water bottle. Now, normally I probably would have let that go on for what I thought was a long time, like maybe 20, 30 seconds. And then I would have helped. Like, I would have given her a chance and then I would have helped. But in that moment, I mean, it probably took maybe 3 to 5 minutes. And at the end of 5 minutes, she was holding her own water bottle and drinking out of the straw. And it was this huge monumental thing. And I thought, oh my gosh, like these, I really feel like these siblings are going to be really good for you, which, you know, it's a struggle when you're growing your family to think what's the best for the child and what's the best for the family unit. And with that, I think, and just the way that they've grown up together. Now the twins are 3 and a half and they adore her and they are helpful and she is super sweet to them. Yeah. And I just feel like they've all grown because of the experience. I feel like she makes them a bit more empathetic and they are just sweet and loving to her and also toughen her up a bit too. Mm-hmm. I mean, because they're annoying brothers. And I think that helps anyone in a situation where a lot of things are about her because she has therapies and special doctor's appointments and a lot of things are about her. And then the twins come along and it's not just about her anymore, but I think it's a humbling, beautiful process that she's really going to benefit from long-term. Mm. So sort of a long answer to a short question, but.
Well, I mean, that's why we're here to unpack your story. So don't apologize. And I love the theme of God's provision all throughout your story, and he provides in surprising ways too, ways that we wouldn't plan. It's beautiful to hear how he's done it. So you have three kids at this point. You have three kids, and you weren't totally done, because I remember you being here at the NEDC with all those kids, and one of you at least was looking a little exhausted, but you still were up for it, right? You were on for another, you're up for another chapter.
Yes. That was sort of, I think for us that was a no-brainer. I guess I don't, the no-brainer for you?
Yeah.
Yeah, I think it was sort of a no-brainer.
We had Gideon and Judah and we're like, we know who these embryos are now. Like, we know what their personalities could be like. We know what they could look like.
Yeah. So we continued, we had leftover embryos from the same donor family. So that was also a motivating factor. Like Graham was saying, we knew there would be a familial aspect to it. And so we went ahead and we implanted two embryos and I got pregnant with one. And that was on the first try this time. So that was actually really nice. Yeah. Did not have to go through the two hard ones to get to one good one. This time it was just one great one. And so we had Cub. His name's Jacob. We call him Cub. He's just a little over a year and he's been a hilarious addition to our family. He's so funny. And,
I love the name. I mean, you're talking to like the world's biggest Chicago Cub fan.
Oh, right. I'm from the Midwest, so I sort of get that. Yeah. It's not why we named him that, but you can pretend.
I'm certainly at that stage in life where you have to do a lot of pretending. You realize all your dreams that you had when you were 20 aren't coming true. So I'll just keep doing that. I'll pretend that's why you named it that. No, not really. I figured not. but I do love the name for whatever reason, and you can explain that, I guess.
Well, I just wanted to name him Cub, but Libby wouldn't go for that. And then we've got the two with the Old Testament names. So you're like, can't be like Gideon, Judah, and then Steve.
Right. Because then it's like, well, you know.
Then I was like, wait, Jacob? And we could call him Cub.
So she sold it.
That's brilliant. That's brilliant. That's the most important contribution to the family that I've heard so far. great job, Graham. No, I do. I love But, you know, and that it segues into to the other thing I really wanted to talk about. You know, people are fascinated and a little bit sometimes a little bit hesitant when it comes to doing open adoption. We don't recommend one over the other. We think whatever is best for you is the choice that you should make. But but we at least think people should consider open adoption. And in your case, it made sense to do open adoption. You basically had to because you knew Macy's birth parents. Mm-hmm. So, right. Yeah. Okay. So there's that. But I know you have you told me when you were here in person, a great relationship with the donor family. Can you talk about that?
It's great. You couldn't ask for it's the complete opposite of what
it's a different situation than
completely
our first situation.
Different situation.
Yeah. And our yeah, it's so I'll start off for me personally. Open adoption is very scary. And it was very scary with Macy, and it was very scary with the boys. It isn't anymore, but it was at first. I'm more introverted, and just the idea of I don't know, it almost felt like I had to be sort of accountable to them. It just wigged me out a little bit. But I knew after going through it with Macy, I knew that the parts that were hard were easy through Christ. And the challenge got a lot less challenging after the first little bit with Macy's birth parents. So I sort of thought that might be the case here. Well, we emailed them, I think, correct? I should have looked this up, but we emailed before the embryo transfer. And you shouldn't serve. Well, you can, but
I found them on Facebook.
Yeah, he stalked them.
Like I'm a detective when it comes to stuff. Here's what I found them off of.
I think first name.
I knew the husband's first name.
Did we know their name?
We didn't know their last name.
I don't even know if we knew their first name. Mark can probably tell us.
I knew his first name, and I think we knew
profession and state.
Yeah, I knew Mark, Illinois. Mark, it's Greg. Yeah, sorry.
And profession. I know his name's not Mark.
I knew Greg.
Yeah.
I knew he lived in Illinois, and I knew what he.
Details. Yeah, yeah.
And his social security number is not.
With those three pieces of information, in about 10 minutes, I had found him.
They know
we're looking at pictures of.
They know we're on this podcast
of their family.
This is impressive.
It was really impressive. I was like, wow. So we thought that might be them, and we thought, okay, they look like people we could be friends with. Like they don't look as intimidating. They look like a sweet family, and that's what we're hoping for. So
yeah, we saw that they had
four children of their own. And so we emailed them a little bit.
Two of them are twins,
and then I sort of wanted to guard my heart a little bit. I was sort of like, I'm not really going to invest in that relationship too much until I know that there's a conception. I felt like I didn't need the pressure of their wishes on top of my own. And so we did email once or twice, and then that was it. And then after I conceived, I don't even think I did it right away. I think I waited a little bit, and I think they were alerted maybe by NEDC, but, I didn't open that door right away. I waited a little bit. And then in the third trimester is when we really started to communicate. And I really liked them right away. I just thought, man, they're just such a sweet family. And then once we had the twins, they came to visit and we got to meet them for the first time. And we just hit it off. They were, they're just lovely people. Yeah. And they just they made this huge choice to place their embryos for adoption, which, I mean, you can't even, it's not like I can just be like, hey, thanks. It's like, there's so much deeper than that. Like, how do you thank someone who preserved life and made really hard choices
for 12 years?
Yeah. To
12 years.
Allow you to grow your family. Yeah. It's crazy. And what's crazy about that, I know she wouldn't mind me sharing, Tori, their biological mom was struggling with placing her embryos for adoption because she had found places that just did a closed adoption. And she really just didn't feel like she could not be in communication with them. And so she, I believe, I should have fact checked this, but I think it was just a month or so before we started our search that they donated the embryos. So it's just such God's timing, because they had had them frozen for 12 years, and then they were just donated right as we were coming into the game. And And again, like I said, we knew right away it was our top family. I can't even remember what we were looking for. That's sort of what it was. There's not much to go off of. So that's why we were like, let's just see if we have any overlaps.
Yeah.
So we met them the first time the year the twins were born, and then we've hung out several times since. And so we just went to Dollywood together this past summer. And that was so fun. And it's really great to look at their kids and see our kids in them, mm-hmm. and texting and being like, doesn't this picture look so much like your oldest? Or, and now her oldest is a senior in high school. And so it's just really fun. And it's also, I mean,
I'll tell them about the joke you made.
What was the joke I made?
Nature versus nurture.
Okay. So I am queen of putting my foot in my mouth. Thank you for reminding me. Sweet, dear, darling husband. So we were hanging out with them this summer, and the twins are very smart. Like, they're very intelligent. They're three and a half. Every parent thinks this. I know every parent thinks this. Okay. But ours really are smart. No, I'm just kidding. But so they're just smart kids. And so I made some joke to the biological family. I was like, oh, you never know. We'll have to see, you know, nature versus nurture. Cause I think they're really smart. I don't know where they get it. It was a joke. Well, they're super humble. And I find out later that, what is she? I mean, she's
their oldest
is the whole, she got a perfect on her ACT.
Perfect on her ACT.
And then has some opportunities. I don't know if it's a very prestigious school. But yeah, she's got options. Let me say that.
They're a brilliant family.
So I'm like, oh, okay. So it's nature. You could have told me that. So I didn't make an idiot of myself. So it's from you guys. Thanks for the smart kids.
A great relationship.
So we have a good relationship. And also beyond like just, being able to navigate that with them, like, this is sort of weird. Like, right now the twins call them aunt and uncle. We're definitely to the point where they understand it conceptually that they're adopted, but not really. So, because it's a little different than traditional adoption, it was very easy to say you grew in your birth mom's tummy and then this is the story, blah blah blah. With the kids, it's sort of like, you were frozen.
My mom still has a hard time understanding.
Yeah. Right. Well, it is a hard thing to understand. Yeah, I totally get it.
Yeah.
Especially for a kid.
Right. There's resources out there, and we are going to start that journey with them soon. But for now, they call them aunt and uncle
and cousins,
and they're getting to know them. And it's convenient also, other than the relational aspect, which is really lovely. And I'm hoping that as the kids grow, that's an open door for them. But also just convenience wise. I mean, I can text her and say, Judah has a rash and he ate this. I think he has an allergy to this. Did your kids have an allergy to this? Or, I mean, just stuff like that. I'm at the doctor's office, family history with Macy. I just have to say, no idea, you know, through all of it. And with the twins, I can say, okay, well, let me text Tori and see, you know, if they've had a history of this on either side of their family. And it's just that aspect of it is hugely helpful. And they're also very good with boundaries, and we're pretty good with boundaries. So it just works.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I get when people are scared though. I don't want it to be like this fantasy thing where, you know, it's going to be easy and perfect for everyone, because there are scary dynamics involved. There's some intimidation and some like, are they going to think we're doing an okay job? Are they, it's sort of weird. It gets sort of weird, and you're going to have weird, awkward lulls in the conversations. But overall, I couldn't be more thankful. And I just say, you know, if anyone is scared of it, just go for it. And just know that you'll have the grace for it as it comes up.
Mm.
It's hard to conceptualize situations that you might be in and think through how you'll react. But in our experience, when it does happen, if you're in prayer about it, then I think most of the time it's pretty easier to handle than you might think.
Well, I'll tell you one thing. You know, faith, of course, is at the heart of the NEDC. That's why we do what we do, because it all revolves around protecting God's tiniest image bearers, which is how we see your children and every child who's been born through the NEDC and the embryos that are still frozen that we're hoping to get out of the freezer. And I just love how that thread, how you guys have been so intentional to weave that thread throughout the telling of your story and doing it without being cliche written. I mean, because God is real and your story really proves that. And it's not just, you know, his presence is there beyond just a Sunday morning or a devotional or Vacation Bible School or some of that sort of stuff. He's real. If we, as we move toward wrapping it up, let's look big picture. And I know, is your family complete, by the way? I'll ask that first.
I mean, only God knows. We do have, we do have two embryos left.
So we'll see.
So we'll see. We are very open to it. I'm also sort of old and tired, so but we love it. I mean, we really love it.
I hope they both turn into twins and we have four of them.
I love it. Well, you just never know. I mean, as you said.
Yeah, we love it and we'll see, you know, it's,
Well, I know it's a crazy time in your life. I mean, you told me, you know, going into this interview that you're having to build a new house, which I understand. And somehow bears got onto the property and the RV you were staying in, had some issues. So you've had to spend time with friends and family. And now you're hoping to get back to the RV. And then eventually, hopefully somebody gets the bears off your property. You build the house. So
he likes them. He's about to name them.
Well, and I get it. You know, bears are cool. There is nothing. There's just nothing wrong with admitting that.
There's not a single recorded bear attack
this again
in the history of the state of South Carolina.
But you must admit, if you live,
think she's going to be the first.
If you live amongst the bears, statistically, you have a much higher chance, right? If you don't go swimming, you will not be attacked by a shark. If you are a, you know, shark diver.
I'll play Switzerland just say that what each of you says makes sense to me.
Nice.
with that caveat that life is still pretty crazy right now. But it's been a whirlwind. If you look back on a big picture, what are the main ways that building a family and the ways that you have impacted each of your relationships with God? I'd like to end it on that note.
Yeah.
You want to go first?
I
want to think about it.
Man, being a parent is sanctifying. It is refining in all the good and, I don't want to say bad, but incredibly uncomfortable ways. But for me, when I look at my kids and I think about how much I love them and how the next day I love them even more than I did the day before, and I think about how that love just pales in comparison to Christ's love for his bride, I don't understand it. I can't grasp it. That's a really incredible thing that I've experienced. Part of the refinement, part of the understanding God as a father, as I've become a father. We'd probably have to do a whole other podcast to talk about some journey of those things.
I mean, I think,
and maybe we will, but I love it. I love hearing about how you're pushing deeper into the great mystery of who God is. We can know him. We can't know how great he is and how loving he is fully. We'll never, you know, empty that well. It's great. Great. Yeah. Libby, what about you?
Yeah. I think that I had mentioned earlier, but I think having kids that you answer to in a way, it's made me actually read more of my Bible, which has been a really good thing. Because, you know, before I could sort of put my faith into a little category. And then once you have children and you realize how important it is that you're integrating faith into everything that you do because they're watching you and that you do for them and that you teach them, then you have these questions that come up and you're like, I really have to get more serious about, like, faith can't be a concept anymore. This needs to be something that I am living out, that I know why I'm living it out, and that I have a relationship with the Lord to back it all up. So, I mean, I feel like I really stepped into a different place of faith where I realized how important things were, like being in the Word every day and praying every day and really seeking him about things where I feel like before I could kind of get away with, the consequences weren't as great when you're single or when you don't have kids. They're just not as great. And then when you have people relying on you, you're like, wow, this is So, you know, I mean, obviously I've repented of a lot of the pre-kid Libby, but that's been wonderful. And then also just looking back at what I wanted for us, like what I really had my heart set on, and struggling with infertility, I had some not so glamorous, generous moments with the Lord where I really struggled. I felt forgotten. I felt like I was getting the short end of the stick. I sort of built this narrative up in my head that I was going through something unnecessary and that I knew better. I wouldn't have said it like that, but in hindsight, that's the attitude that I was living out. And looking at that now, I just feel so foolish in the best of ways, because I'm like, God knew so much better. I am so, so thankful for our specific children. It's not just that we have children. It's that our specific children who were very clearly meant for us, all four of them, each one of them was very clearly meant for us. And we were given the specific capacity in weird ways to raise them and to be their parents. I think I look at that and I think, man, God is so much bigger than my assumption. And he's so much bigger than my personal desire. And I just want to be moving forward. I want to be really open-minded to the goodness of God and to the fruit of the Lord and to anything he has for us. I mean, obviously it's easy when you sort of get what you want and we have four kids. And so it's like, yeah, God gave us that. That's amazing. But there's obviously challenges that go with that too. And I really feel like each challenge that comes up, we are able to be more, a bit stronger and a bit strengthened and a bit more, we have more of a solid foundation, I would say, now, where we can say, okay, this feels really hard and this doesn't feel fair, but look at all the amazing things that God has done for us thus far. And we know he will continue to do that, even if it doesn't look like the outcome that we would specifically pick. And we're humbled with that a lot with Macy, because there's things we want for her and for all of our children, but for Macy specifically, we want things in her body to work differently. And so when we have a hard doctor's appointment or a therapy that sort of hits a dead end, it's easy to get into the pit of, this isn't fair, Lord, like, what are you doing? But then we just return to, you know, and you know so much more than we do. And you want the good for those who love you. And that's been, I think, a big change in who we are as people and who we are as a couple and who we are as parents.
And some of that lamenting is still okay. I mean, I think everybody has to, and I've heard it put this way, learn to love the story you're in. You guys clearly love the story you're in. Doesn't mean it's always easy. And that's okay to be honest with God about that, not be Pollyanna and pretend there's nothing hard about it, right?
Yeah, yeah, correct. I think I don't remember who it was. R.C. Sproul, maybe not. Someone said, need a good cry and then you wash your face and you move on. It's sort of that concept of like, maybe once a quarter I have a good cry and then I'm like, all right, that was good. I got it out. Now we can keep going.
Well, you guys keep going. Thank you so much for sharing your story. It is a great one. And we're honored that you would come on the podcast and talk about it a little bit. And we'll be anxious to watch as God continues to craft the narrative in your life. And by the way, if you enjoy this podcast, we would ask that you rate it, review it, subscribe to it. That simple. That'll help spread the word and get more ears on the podcast. So rate, review, subscribe to the Embryo Adoption Podcast. You can do that and be making a small difference. If you want any more information about embryo adoption or the National Embryo Donation Center, you can go to our website. It's embryodonation.org. Again, embryodonation.org for the NEDC. I'm Mark Mellinger. This has been the Embryo Adoption Podcast.